and once again showing his versatility.
I think we have 5 number ones.
Everything's coming up Milhouse.
But $22 million for Brian Daboc, give me a break.
And Redmond has been thrown out of the ballgame.
An NFL tight end, you know, those playing years are dog years.
Maybe it's adamantium. Maybe it's vibranium. Maybe it's something really cool I don't even know about yet.
Always, I'll be your host today. It's just me and one Mr. Mattis. How goes it, bud?
Good, man. It's going good. It's good to be back in the cast. You know, it's been a little bit, and it's been a pretty exciting week in terms of some NBA news. It's tough to even catch up, so I'm glad we're getting together and talking about it a little bit.
Yeah, I figure, you know, the Red Sox are an absolute dumpster fire right now, and it's still too early to really start talking about the Patriots. And, you know, we just had the NBA draft, so I know you and I have been talking about it, and we wanted to really just do a Celtics episode specifically. I mean, really, what else are you going to talk about? I don't want to even think about the Bruins after they, you know, shit the bed in Game 7. Also, like, a week after I created Bruins t-shirts, so that was helpful to the 300s. Appreciate it, boys. There's a whole lot going on with the Celtics right now, and, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. The big news, and again, it's just news. Who knows what the hell is actually going to happen, because it's still too early to really anything officially happen. But Kemba Walker, that's been the big rumor. And Kemba Walker is a guy that I know you and I go way back with, just because, you know, we went to college in Connecticut, not far from UConn. So I feel like that may be a reason why we're kind of high on, at least I am, just because, you know, I've been watching the guy play from afar for like 10 years. It's not like he's just a pretty good NBA player that popped up like, oh, okay, we'll take him. But I mean, I got to say, if Kyrie's going to be going, Kemba Walker coming to this team, I love this move for the Seas. I mean, I've heard a lot of complaints, though. Like, you kind of got to take it, you know, with a grain of salt if you're listening to sports talk radio. But I've heard some people like the move. I heard some people don't like the move. And to that, I just got to say, people in this town are never happy. Like what do you want them to do?
It's a big part of it. It is a big part of it. And going back to what you said about, you know, always loving Kemba, this is somebody that I've followed for a very long time. He's someone who's very fun to root for. He's someone who a lot of people might say, oh, what has he ever done in the NBA? And if he was really this good, you know, why hasn't Charlotte done anything yet? Well, I mean, I guess, let me ask you, you know, besides Kemba Walker, give me one guy that stands out in Charlotte from the past 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. There isn't one. So, but he's a guy that he's always been fun to root for. Going back to when we were in school back in 2011, I'll never forget that run he had with UConn. The kid's got a heart of a lion. He's someone who just plays his ass off every single night. And it's something that Kyrie just didn't do. Is he as good as Kyrie Irving? No, he isn't. Yes, he averaged 2 points more a game last year. But, you know, Kyrie is the better overall player. But it's not that far off. I mean, this guy was a third-team All-NBA player this year. Averaged 26 points a game, 6 assists, you know, shot 35% from the field this year from deep this year, which, you know, maybe isn't exemplary, but that's because he was taking 8 or 9 shots from there back, you know, this year. But the past 2 years, when he's only taken about 7 attempts per game, he was hitting at about 38%, 39%. So he's a good shooter, too. And he's someone who I think can take over a game when he has to, but he's someone who could fit in and be humble. I'm very excited if this is true. I'm trying not, as you said, it's not official yet.
Yeah.
You know, well, what's the,
No, I'm just going to say, you're talking about, how people are giving him shit because, you know, what has Kemba Walker ever done? I mean, he's been playing for Charlotte. Like, I know, you know, winning is everything, but let's be realistic here. Charlotte's been terrible ever since Chris Paul left, you know, fucking 10, 15 years ago, whatever the hell that was. So, I mean, to rag on him for not bringing up that team that had no one on it, that is just really Kemba Walker. And he's, you know, he's getting double teamed. He's got all the attention on him, and he's still averaging 26, 27 points a game, like you said. So I think to rag on him for that, I think it's a little bit misguided. I mean, the guy's had no one around him. So I would expect, obviously, if he does come here, his shots and his points go down. But if you put that in perspective of pairing him with the rest of the guys on this team, that's absolutely fine. You don't need him to score 30 points a game. Like, look at the Rockets. They had James Harden scoring 30 points a game, and they flamed out real fucking quick.
Yeah, they did. And I mean, maybe it's a bit much to say people are hopping on him for not winning, but what I have heard is that he's overrated. So he's a volume guy. And because there's no one else to shoot the ball in Charlotte, you know, that's the only reason that he's scoring. Yeah, he took over 20 shots a game last year, but the previous 2 years before that, he wasn't, and he was still just as efficient, putting up just as many points. And like I said, he was actually, you know, hitting more, in terms, especially in terms of shots from deep. So, but I think the biggest thing for me is watching what he did. Yes, it was college. Yes, it was 8 years ago at this point, back when he won the title with UConn in 2011. But he just, he's got that it, you know. And I know it may seem like I'm kind of reaching for that, or maybe it's wishful thinking. And maybe I am a little biased in terms of just always being a big fan of him. But I think that he's the type of guy, almost kind of like Isaiah Thomas was, where he can kind of be that little, you know, mascot on the court almost. And it's hard for him to rub off on people the wrong way. It may not matter to a lot of people out there, but I think it's kind of cool that before this year, he won the past two NBA Sportsman of the Year awards. So he's just like a really good guy. And I think with the culture and just the shit that was just engulfing this team last year, that's kind of a lot more about why I'm excited about Kemba than I am just pure play alone.
Yeah, and I think the Kemba signing, if it does happen again, I think it can be, I think it's very similar to the Al Horford signing, where when he came in, you know, if you were a legit basketball fan, you were excited, one, because, you know, he's a very good player, but two, was also the first max free agent to choose Boston and really ever. So to get a guy like Kemba, who maybe isn't, you know, a top five, top 10 player like Kyrie can be, but he's a good character guy. He's a good glue guy who I think will grow on people. And I think he'll do the little things that you really need to kind of, you know, grow with this team and succeed. Because, I mean, look at Al Horford. As much as people shit on the signing when he got here because, you know, he's quote unquote average Al and he wasn't shooting the ball enough and he's not, you know, a flashy player. Now that, and we'll get to this in a few minutes, but now that he might be leaving, everyone's saying, oh, the Celtics are screwed now. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. Does he suck or do you need him?
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, we've talked about Al Horford and how polarizing he is and the average Al comparisons, but especially losing somebody like him who probably was a big calming presence on that team, I think it's all the more important to get someone like Kemba in. Now, I think that, you know, the reason why some people are a bit skeptical about Kemba is because, well, okay, you know, sure, Kyrie was very easy to get on him last year, and I have no problem doing so. But I don't know if, you know, maybe Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, some of the other younger guys behind the scene, they may not have been, you know, peaches themselves. You know, and this year, here they are. Finally, this is my team. And, you know, it's going to be the two young guns, the two Jays taking over. And wait, now Kemba Walker's coming in too? So what? Is this going to be Kyrie all over again? And I know, again, in the NBA, these guys know each other. And they know that Kemba is a lot more adored, maybe. Then Kyrie is in a lot of respects, and I think he'll be welcome, but that could cause some tension too. So it could kind of backfire. But I think that he's also the same type of person who doesn't need to be the superstar, who, like you said, doesn't need to keep taking 20 shots a game. And again, he put up over 6 assists a game too. He knows how to dish the ball out. So I think he could fit in.
And it's something that you mentioned that I kind of want to just touch on a little bit is other young guys getting off scot-free for the drama that happened last year. And I know just kind of going back a little ways, they made a great run. They got to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals without Kyrie, without Hayward. And, you know, some people saying it was too much success, or they kind of feel themselves a little bit too much when, you know, you guys aren't that good. And it was pretty obvious to start last year where the team was, you know, kind of a shit show. But they eventually got it together to some degree, but they just never were really as good as we all thought they would be, obviously. But to your point of, you know, how are these guys going to mesh with another star player, another max guy coming in Kemba Walker? And there's something that I just always think of when just kind of looking for where it went off the rails with Kyrie, because, you know, he was routinely throwing young guys, as he called them, under the bus, and, you know, young guys don't know how to win. You know, we need to bring in like a 15-year veteran. He was shitting on the coaching and all that. And it just was, it was weird. It just seemed like he was just kind of being pissy, because I remember, like, if you go back, you look, and it's, you know, early days of Kyrie playing with Jaylen Brown, who he seemed to butt heads with the most. But early days, they seemed to be best buds. You know, Jaylen Brown's hitting a big shot and they're both looking at each other, doing the third eye thing. And then somewhere along the lines, someone pissed in someone's Cheerios bowl and that went to shit. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think that's why it's another good thing. It's not a fiery personality who's going to just go in there and start, you know, asking people, what the fuck do you think government means? And just like looking for a fight.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the way he carried himself is going to be big. But I don't think we'll ever know exactly for sure what happened. The reason why everyone gets on Kyrie so much is because Kyrie had no problem putting himself out there in the media.
Right.
He just had to go out of his way to let us know that he called LeBron. And then he apologized to LeBron. And that's kind of when it all started. So I think when Kyrie started throwing himself out there more, these guys, you know, didn't take it well. And like you said, you know, they could turn around too and say, hey, listen, Kemba, you know, or not just Kemba, anyone. Listen, we got to the, you know, game seven within minutes, literally minutes of being in the NBA Finals and beating LeBron James without you, without Kyrie, without Hayward. Let's not forget that Gordon Hayward's still there. So has that problem actually gone away? Is that really an issue? Because here's another thing you have to think about. When Kemba comes in, Kemba runs the one, and then you have three guys who all should really be small forwards, you know, so playing the three. Who do you start? I would honestly like to see Marcus Smart start at the two solely for the defensive impact. Kemba, you know, some people want to say that he's an impactful defensive player. He's not. I mean, he's probably a little better than Kyrie, but neither one's a particularly great defender or anyone to write home about. So I want to see Smart out there. And then what do you do with the other three, with Tatum, Brown, and Hayward? Sure, you can play small ball, put some of them at the four. But, I mean, I don't think any of those guys are really a big – intimidating presence. So while in some small ball lineups that's fine, you still need a four. Does that rear its ugly head again too? You know, how do you fit them in? A lot of people say Gordon Hayward, just run point forward through him. Well, if you do that, you know, then Kemba was going to run the offense. So that's another question in terms of fit with Kemba too, that I think has a lot of validity.
Yeah, so I mean, I think they might do kind of what we saw some of last year, where they kind of mix and match like their offensive and their defensive lineups. I mean, we always hear about positionless basketball, and I know the Warriors have really made that so popular. I mean, you could just stick out Kemba, Smart, Tatum, Brown, and then whoever you want at center, just to really, you know, have that be the, you know, the run and gun offense. I mean, when you with Baines being traded though, and Tice gone, and Horford likely gone, you're probably going to want to bring in a vet, maybe someone like the mid-level exception that, you know, can really eat those minutes up. And whether it's a guy like Cantor or someone, I just don't want to go out there and start dumping assets to just kind of, you know, put bubble gum in a, you know, a leaky hole in the dam.
Exactly. If you want to talk about horrible defense, you want to talk about Enes Kanter. I mean, he's got some offensive game, but holy moly, that guy is just Swiss cheese down low. And I don't think that, I mean, everyone was highlighting how good Baines was defensively, but Horford too. Horford was great. I mean,
he right.
was the anchor of this team's D and the offense. Because another thing that you look at with Horford, which is why, you know, people who are excited about Capella, you know, they aren't thinking. Horford is he is kind of like the keystone of that offense, because what he'll do, you know, not just in the pick and roll, but he can pop out, you know, he can hit a three. He can, you know, get down low. He can do whatever you need him to do. And if you bring in a big who, yes, may be a forceful presence down low, you don't want it to be too one-dimensional. So the offense is going to change a lot, not so much just losing Kyrie, but I think more so Horford. And it's going to be interesting on how, if you spend this money on Kemba, you go out and get another impactful big guy, and who it's going to be and how you fit them in.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts. We'll see who comes in. But I think we're all kind of expecting – some key players to go out. And obviously the big one is Kyrie. And I mean, at this point it's all right, fine. Just get out of here. This didn't work out. Let's move on. But Kyrie is just a fucking pill. And it's just weird. I mean, obviously it didn't work out. And I don't know whether it was him and the young guys or he clashed with Brad Stevens. I know they were playing a clip on the radio today of Kyrie throwing Brad Stevens under the bus because they didn't play the right defense that he wanted to play against Kemba Walker when he shredded him. So he threw the coach under the bus. He threw the young guys under the bus. He was talking about how we need, we need a big time 15-year veteran to come join this team to bail us out. Like, well, you're supposed to be that guy. He's complaining about, he didn't complain about it, but you could, you know, when he's yelling at players for not giving him the last shot, you could feel his disenchantment growing with Gordon Hayward. I mean, from day one, they're smiling at each other. They're giving each other the goo-goo eyes when they both signed with Boston, or, you know, when Kyrie got traded and Hayward signed, and it just looked like match made in heaven. And then, you know, he blows his fucking ankle out, and Kyrie is just, you could just see the look on his face. He's like, well, this is not going to fucking work. I got to get out of here. And then comes the report that I heard the other day that I think Danny Ainge allegedly said something to Kyrie about his leadership style and said, hey, why don't you try and, you know, do so-and-so. And it really turned off Kyrie. And it's just like, you wanted to be the guy. You wanted to be LeBron the way you think of LeBron, but you really ended up being LeBron the way we think of LeBron. Just a whiny bitch who doesn't, you know, likes to have things his own way. And when it doesn't go his way, he just packs up his shit. He grabs his ball and he wants to go home, or to Brooklyn in this case.
Yeah. And if you really think about it, it's kind of become a pattern with him, you know, where, of course, if you're a Celtics fan, you focus exclusively on the season. You have enough evidence of the type of individual he seems to be and the way he seems to carry himself. But also, it didn't end too well in Cleveland either. And,
yeah,
you know, he got what he wanted in Cleveland. And then, you know, that changed quickly. And it's interesting to think about, if Hayward doesn't go down against the Cavs, did that really change the trajectory of this franchise? Because, you know, it's easy to get on Hayward too for last year, but there were flashes he showed, especially at the end of the season. Like he was starting to come on strong. Now, yeah, he did fade a bit in the playoffs. You know, if you look it up, there does seem to be perhaps one instance where he took a pretty hard hit on the floor, landed bad in his ankle again, and he started to kind of go down after that, because he, in game one against the Bucks, he kind of won that game. He was huge. So I don't want to completely give up on Hayward just yet. But it's just interesting to see, if he doesn't go down and if Kyrie stays healthy that first year, what do they do? But then you're going to say, well, I mean, they made the Eastern Conference Finals that year, but this year
they didn't win.
Well, right. You know, but I think that this year, just trying to force Hayward back in, which, yes, Brad does deserve some of the blame for that.
I know that, like, I understand players would be upset about that. Like, this guy's playing like shit. Like, why? Just because he's the coach's boy. But you also have to be an adult and realize, okay, the team's paying him $34 million a year, and he's a fucking stud player. Like, we have to do this. We have to work him back in. If we play him 5 minutes a night, he's never going to come back. So for, you know, them to get upset about that, I would have to say, grow the fuck up.
Also, I think exactly, and I think that goes back to kind of what I was saying. Did the young guys maybe go a little too far last year too? Were they a bit of a, you know, pill themselves? Because it's exactly like you said. It's not even just for the money aspect of it, but the fact that if this guy is going to be a big part of your team, you have to get him back in the court. You have to let him find his way. You have to, you know, let him get himself ingrained within the system, which is going to take some time, not only physically, but mentally as well. Not just coming back from an injury, but just understanding how to play with your teammates, how to fit within a scheme. So if Brad didn't really work him in, or maybe force him in sometimes, who knows how, if he ever really would have took to it at all. I mean, he really was in an upward swing at the end of last season. And I would like to see what he can do again this year. So maybe the young guys, and here's the thing too, you know, even Tatum, sure, I do think that he was suppressed a little bit last year with the team as it was constituted, but there were times last year too where, you know, he could have made more of an effort. He could have played away. It's same with, you know, Jaylen. If any of these guys actually exploded and earned the time and took the time away, that's fine. But, you know, you were good and you were fighting for minutes, but nobody took off like a rocket. So, you know, Brad didn't really have a reason to have to play Jaylen or have to play, you know, Tatum over him at certain times. You know?
Yeah. And I don't want to be one of the fans that just, you know, Brad can do no wrong, because there's obviously, you know, he makes mistakes, but I mean, in a situation like that, like, he had to play him. Like, you see people that you know, break their foot and then they don't go to physical rehab. Their foot's fucked up forever. Like, you have to push through. You have to do it. If you don't do it, you're screwed. Tatum, I think he got a little bit of the Kobe stink on him last year. He was training with Kobe in the offseason after his rookie season, and you could see he had the Kobe influence the second year, because he's doing a lot of pull-up jumpers, a lot of bullshit, a lot of bad shots. Kind of reminds me of Antoine Walker at times. And I think this season was probably a little bit humbling for everyone. So that's definitely, I think, probably a good learning experience. And then Jaylen Brown. It's funny, because Jaylen Brown, when he came into the league, one of the scouting reports was talking about how he can kind of be a pain in the ass because he's so smart. Like, he's a really smart guy. He's the VP of the Players Association. So he's obviously, you know, he's an actually intelligent guy. So when Kyrie Irving is coming around saying the earth's flat, you know, I don't believe in this, fuck Thanksgiving, Jaylen Brown's probably sitting there like, this moron is leading our team.
Yeah. Jaylen, it's one of those, you know, maybe too smart for your own good. You know, a little big for his britches. I think there was a lot of big egos, you know. And I did say this at the beginning of last year too, and one mantra I kept bringing up, or, you know, old adage, is the too many cooks in the kitchen, you know. So and that's kind of what it came down to too. So I don't want to completely overload this team, and I understand the approach where some guys say, hey, just let Tatum and Brown and Hayward see what you can do, and then maybe wait to go after someone like Draymond next year or something like that. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad they're going after someone like Kemba, and not just doing this because, you know, we've built assets for so many years. And in the NBA,
right,
you can hold out for Anthony Davis, but that happens like once every 10 years, you know? So if a guy like Kemba's available, you're not going to do much better than that, the point guard position. You're just not, you know? And Mike Conley, no disrespect to him, and people who follow the 300s know that in my offseason article, he was my number one target. I wanted Mike Conley to come in, mostly because I didn't think we had a realistic chance at Kemba, but you know, no disrespect to Conley, but he'd be making just as much as Kemba Walker, and Kemba is better than Mike Conley. So that's what you got to pay in today's NBA. So these people that are just don't spend it all on Kemba because he's not the superstar. Again, he was third team all NBA. He's put up over 20 points a game. And for those who are still have a question about Kemba, well, what about in the biggest moments? In, you know, 11 playoff games, he's averaged over 21 points a game. All right. So, you know, it's not like he hasn't shown up in the biggest moments before. And this is probably the best opportunity of his career. You got to go get him now. You can't just hope that some mega, super, ultra top three player is going to be available again next year, because they're probably not.
Right. And to that, I just go back to what I said. People in this town are just, they're never fucking happy, because what do you want the Celtics to do? I mean, in the absence of getting the Anthony Davis trade done, and I don't blame Danny, because I would not have traded Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis. And, you know, I blogged about it like 2 years ago saying I would trade everyone on the roster for Anthony Davis. But that's before we really saw what Tatum can do. And then that was also before Anthony Davis really kind of made it very clear he did not want any part of being here. And you could say, well, should we call his bluff? Maybe if we bring him here, we can re-sign him. But, you know, it's hard to blame Danny for not pulling the trigger on that. So how often do those deals become available? I mean, there was Anthony Davis, who just became available really this year. There was Kawhi last year, extenuating circumstance because his leg was all fucked up. And it's like, people say, oh, the Celtics should have traded for him. And well, in hindsight, yeah, sure. But back then, it's like he played like, what, four games last season? So you didn't know if he was done. So before him, there's really not a lot of guys that pop up. I mean, I know the big one here is Kevin Garnett, but how often do you get those mega trades that actually work out for a legit guy in his prime? So I don't know. I don't know what people want the Celtics to do. Just, you could either sit on their hands, not sign Kemba, or even worse, trade away all these young guys that you've been hoarding for someone like Bradley Beal, who's nice, but it's a lateral move. Like, that gets you nowhere. At least adding Kemba gives you the potential to build something.
Right. And I think, God, you have Bradley Beal, Gordon Hayward. You'd probably have to give up either Brown or Tatum. But again,
if not both. And then you have to match salary. So it's like all these moves, they just, like, the NBA, it's so tough to do those deals, because even the Anthony Davis deal, you'd have to give up Tatum and or Brown, and then throw in Smart, because those guys don't make enough money, so you have to match salary. So it's like, well, what the fuck are we doing here? Then there's no one on this team to build around. Then we're kind of back to having one guy.
And I think one of the biggest, you know, trade chips the Celtics still have now is just kind of saying, I want to see what he can do. But, you know, Gordon Hayward's another guy who they could still ultimately move and clear a lot of cap space. There might be teams out there who like the Celtics, or like some people thought the Celtics might do, is before the Kemba news broke out, a lot of people thought that what the Celtics are going to do were continue to acquire some young assets, maybe take on some bad contracts, and then once those expire, you know, let the young guys grow a bit more. And then go after some free agents in a couple years. I understand that approach. I guess another, you know, response to what we just said is someone could say, well, you know, listen, in today's NBA, there's a lot more short-term deals. You know, a lot of 1+1 deals, you know, the one that Durant did. A lot of people think that wherever Kawhi goes, he's just going to sign a 1+1. You know, so I guess these marquee guys, you could say, maybe have a higher chance of becoming available in today's NBA than they used to. You know, back then it was all about 7-8 year contracts. You don't see those anymore. You never see anyone sign this big contract. So there is a higher turnover, but
I would never do one of those 1+1 deals anymore. I mean, LeBron held the Cavs over a barrel for years with it. And then, like, there was rumors that Kyrie might try and do it with the Celtics, and I would not want it, because you can't plan your franchise year to year like that. It completely fucks things up, especially if you're trading assets for a guy and then he says, all right, I'll sign for a year and then we'll see. Like, no, if I were running the Celtics, I would say, as a, you know, as a franchise rule. We don't do that. You cannot plan for long-term success like that.
But then you don't get anybody. So that's the thing, is the players have all that leverage in this league, and that's what it's just become an entirely a players' league, and they have all the leverage. And I think that, you know, over the governors now, it's another thing. So, but over the governors, you know, the players have all the leverage. So if you don't fall into that, it's tough to get some of the big guys you want. But I also said this too, the NBA is still all about team basketball. I understand what Kawhi Leonard did, all right, this year. I mean, he carried Toronto on his back, but they still had some other great players this year. I mean, they had Lowry, Siakam. Gasol had a resurgence, particularly in the playoffs after coming over from Memphis in the middle of the season. The Bucks, yes, Giannis was the MVP, but they're still a good team. The Warriors, yes, everyone's talking about Steph, but you got Klay and Durant and Draymond, so it's still a good team. So, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe these guys that, you know, like LeBron's or whoever want to hold the team over a barrel, look what he did with the Lakers last year, nothing. So, you know, that could have a reverse effect too. But I'm done with, I mean, we were just saying before the show that the summer of 2019 started in 2017, you know, and I'm just kind of sick of doing that. And I want to live in the moment. And if Kemba's available, just go get him, man.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm glad they're not doing that, hopefully, and just kind of acquiring assets, because it's one of two things happens. One, you have this treasure chest of assets like we thought we had with the Nets deal, and you sit on these things and you just wait to strike on something like the Anthony Davis deal. And then if that never comes around, or if something, you know, goes sour like it did with AD this time and you can't get him, then what happens is you're stuck with three fucking first round picks. And it's like, it's not the NFL where you can trade around, you can move up, and it's like, you know, poker chips. No, three first round picks, especially mid to late round first picks, are fucking garbage. Yeah. They're lottery tickets. So Danny has three first round picks. He couldn't even get to the top 10 if he wanted to. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, there was the infatuation with Justice Winslow. He offered four first round picks, and they told him to fucking pound sand. So to have those three first round picks, like, it's good because you can take three hits on, you know, high ceiling guys, high risk guys, but you're most likely getting role players and bench guys and high character guys, which we saw in the draft. So that's all well and good, but I don't want to be planning for the next 10 years so we can have, you know, Memphis's pick in 2027. Like, that does us no fucking good.
I think we need to just take a moment to really thank Michael Jordan. Because you brought up another really interesting non-move, you know, one that didn't happen. Thank God it didn't happen a couple of years ago. But do you remember that? When Danny was about to trade away the farm for Justice effing Winslow, and it was because Michael Jordan wanted Frank Kaminsky, who, by the way, the very same Michael Jordan decided he was not going to resign today, and rejected a godfather offer from Danny, which I think allowed us to either use one of those picks to go get Kyrie or something like that. And then today we find out that the Hornets, owned by Michael Jordan, also lowballed Kemba Walker, maybe forcing him out the door. So if Kemba does come here, I think that we all collectively should send Michael Jordan a Christmas gift or something this year, because he just seems to be putting the Celtics in some great moves.
Yeah, the Kemba thing was weird because I had never even thought of it as a possibility, because I had heard him in an interview saying, you know, yeah, I'll definitely take less to stay here. And I thought that was him being like, he wants to stay in Charlotte. He wants to kind of be hometown hero, kind of, you know, not hometown, but, you know, a small town hero, and kind of build that team from the ground up. But it sounds like Michael Jordan, you know, thinks he's at the poker table and really tried to, you know, hose him for, what did they offer, like 140 compared to, like,
I think it was 5 years, 140 or 160. Yeah.
And what's the max right now?
The max that they could have offered him was $221 million.
So, like, this is like John Lester lowballing style that the Red Sox did. When a guy of his caliber, and, you know, not to say that I agree with it, I mean, I think these guys are all disgustingly overpaid. But when a guy of his caliber becomes a free agent and you can't offer him the max and you offer him $60 million less, that guy has every right to flip you the fucking bird, get up and walk out and go sign with someone else. That's absurd. And what are they saving money for?
Right.
Who are they spending this money on?
And that's exactly it, you know. So it's like, well, I think, again, it just shows the type of guy he is, where I truly believe Kemba would have been one of those to take less money. But again, you got to present me with something. I mean, you're going to renounce everybody. Who the hell else would Charlotte get? They could have all the money in the world. Who the hell is going to Charlotte? Now, again, you could say that about the Celtics before, too, you know, because, you know, Horford started it. Then you get Hayward. And if you get Kemba, you know, that's just unheard of. You know, for years, you had to trade to get people in here. And then we get three in a row. So, but the difference was Celtics had at the time that Horford was coming here and Hayward was coming here. They had assets. They had players. Charlotte has nothing. So if you're going to lowball him like that, and you're not going to, you know, present him with, you know, guys that you're going to spend the money on otherwise who can help him win, he would be a moron to stay there. I mean, what the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, I mean, that's just a team that's never going to go anywhere. And I was trying to look up the dates, and because I know Michael Jordan is infamous for mismanaging this franchise and just running it like an idiot. But I don't think we can pin the Adam Morrison draft pick on him. I think that was before, at least before he was the majority owner.
That's when they were the Bobcats.
Yeah, that shithole. But yeah, speaking of the draft, so I know we're not draft nerds, and I'm not here to break down, you know, these guys' college tape. I don't really care. I'm more of a wait and see kind of guy with this. But I was kind of pissed off. We did not draft my guy Bol Bol, which I'm pretty steamed about. I wrote multiple blogs about him. He just fascinates me. He was, what was he, 7'2", obviously son of Manute Bol. The guy was a monster, and he could jack threes. So, like, to not take a flyer on that guy, like, I would have drafted him at 14 because I'm a fucking idiot, but not take him in the 20s or in the 30s or even, I don't know, I think Miami ended up drafting him at, like, 50. The guy was sitting there all night. I fucking felt bad for him. But then Miami turned around and traded him, like, immediately after they drafted him. So
right away.
I know he's a big guy with a, you know, coming off a broken foot, but at that point, like, a second-round pick, like, that is useless. That is, like, money in a fucking deteriorating third world country. Like, you might as well draft him. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, I think it's funny. You would have taken him at 14. He ended up going, you know, just 30 picks later. No big deal. It's 44.
That's why me and Michael Jordan will never run a successful NBA franchise.
Yeah. Michael Jordan took what, Kaminsky at 9. But anyway. So yeah, Bol Bol, I didn't think he was going to drop that far. And it was interesting. We were talking all day. I remember how excited you were. And I kind of wanted him to.
They invited him to the green room. They don't do that if you're not going to go in the top 20.
No, exactly. You know, but the NBA
is mean.
Especially when you say the second round is just such a just a barren wasteland. I think the only really big star player that came out of the second round, and I believe it was the second round, was Draymond Green, or it was the very late first. I mean, you don't get.
No, I think Draymond. And then, I think Isaiah, if you want to, you know, use the term star loosely. Right.
And you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ginobili or Parker, one of them too, went a little late too, you know, because there were foreign guys no one knew about, but Greg Popovich.
Three guys in the last 20 years.
Right, yeah. You know, I found it so funny too that we were watching the draft and San Antonio gets first round pick, and of course they go with another foreign guy.
They love him.
But it works for them, you know. But I guess what the Celtics did, you know, at 14, taking Romeo Langford again, as you said, we're not huge, huge college guys. But I know, you know, this kid was a big recruit coming out. I'd heard the name before. Apparently there's a thumb injury, you know, that hindered his shooting. Or at least, you know, some analysts were saying that. Brad was saying that at his press conference. There was news that came out today that said he was going to be limited in the summer league. He'd play in the summer league, but that he was going to be limited due to this ligament thumb injury. But the kid looks like he's got some talent. But again, he's a wing. He's a guy in the wing. And especially with Horford leaving, listen to the big men the Celtics currently have. All right, so they got Semi, who they picked up his option this week. Great, especially for, you know, the defensive side of the ball. Still have the Dancing Bear, Yabusele. We have Grant Williams, who was another kid they drafted at 22. We can talk about him. And, of course, the one and only Time Lord.
Time Lord.
There he is. Of course, get your Time Lord t-shirts at 300s.com today. But that's it. So it was interesting to see them. I know they took Grant Williams, and, again, he seems almost kind of like a team-first Al Horford-y type guy. But they really do still got to get some bigs, man. Like, they really, really do. So,
yeah, I mean, I know you and I are both big Time Lord fans. I mean, the guy, his offensive game obviously needs a ton of work, but in terms of rebounds and blocks and just being the guy in the paint, I'm like, he can fucking do that job for peanuts, whatever he's making now. I mean, he's my Brighton neighbor, so me and him can go, you know, work out. I'll show him a few things.
Over at the but,
yeah. So I mean, the Celtics, I mean, I'm not a big draft guy, so I'm not going to get into the analysis of it. It kind of seemed like they reached on some of the picks just because they want to get high character guys. But at least Romeo, I know that, you know, they're 14th overall. He fell a little bit because of the thumb injury, and he's a classic, you know, high ceiling guy where you might as well take a little bit of a flyer. Who knows? Because when they drafted him, I was like, this guy kind of looks like a fucking pill too. But then, you know, the more I read about it, it seemed like he was kind of pissed off because he slipped more than he thought he was going to. So who knows? Maybe he ends up being a, not to say, you know, not to compare him to an all-time great, but maybe he ends up being someone like Paul Pierce who fell a lot more than he thought he should have and then used that his whole career to really, really drive him.
Sure. And I was looking into him a little bit more afterwards, and this is someone, again, who has talent. And if he slipped and he was at 14 and that's a slip, that's still pretty damn good. You're still a lottery pick.
It's a lottery pick.
If any NBA team is considering the lottery, you've got to have at least some semblance of talent. I also saw a stat, too, that he said he shot like 40% from three in high school. So he shot 27% last year, which is what a lot of people harped on, you know, right away. And it's easy to get caught up in numbers. You know, a lot of people that know me know I'm a big numbers nerd. And 27% is pretty bad, especially if you're a shooting guard. But I guess, again, that thumb injury is really hurting him. And he shot 40% from deep in high school. So the kid's got the talent there. You know, I'm ready to give him a chance. And the thing is, with the talent we have on the roster, he doesn't have to step in right away. So he's got time to heal up. He's got time to learn and grow. And, you know, getting back to Time Lord, Robert Williams, his presence, obviously, on the team made it. I was just so surprised these reports coming out about guys like Capella and stuff like that. I mean, maybe Robert Williams is like a young Capella. He's that same type of player, that high-flying, shot-blocking, rim-running type guy. So I'd rather see kind of what we have in him this year than maybe trade the house to go get a guy like Clint Capella right now. You know, I think that would be foolish. You know, so to throw all your money at Kemba and then trade everything else away for Capella might not be the best move.
Yeah.
Because we do have time more.
I know we joke about it, but I like him a lot, and I think he could be a good fit, especially if you have these offensive heavy lineups. I mean, I know NBA is kind of going to where every center should be able to step out and bang a three home. Like, okay, well, not everyone has a fucking center that can jack threes. I mean, Aaron Baines was taking too many threes, in my opinion. So if we want to have a guy a little bit old school, kind of sit under the rim and just be that roamer, I'm fine with that. If you have Kemba, Tatum, Hayward, and Brown, and then Smart, and, you know, all the other guys kind of worked in, I'm more than fine with that. But I'm not trading, you know, half the team to Clint Capella. It's just, like I said, I think it's a little bit of a lateral move. So it's funny to see with the draft, though, because I know Romeo, I think going into this past season, was like a top five prospect, and then he had the injury and didn't play as well as he would have liked and ended up slipping. But Danny is just obsessed with these young players. I'm really interested to see how the Celtics approach the draft. And I don't know if it starts next year or the year after, where they finally get rid of the one-and-done rule. You can start drafting high school kids again. Because Danny's infatuated with these high school kids. I mean, you go all the way back to, like, Gerald Green and Al Jefferson. Like, he was drafting high school kids every fucking year before they were like, all right, Danny, no more. One-and-dones.
Can't do it. Nope.
Yeah. I mean, Jefferson was a good player. Yeah, obviously, he was the linchpin in the Garnett trade, but he didn't end up being a great, great player. Gerald Green, as much as I love his wild haircuts and his you know, random 3-point bombs from the corner, he's you know, not really a great player. So those guys are the hardest to project, but they have the highest ceiling, and, you know, usually you can get them a little bit lower.
Exactly. I mean, because you know by that age when you're in high school if you're going to be, you know, a stud or not. And I was listening to Adam Jones last week. He brought up a good point. You know, a lot of people were surprised when Cam Johnson went to the Phoenix Suns at 11 because he was a guy, I think, who was like 3 or 4 year player. And it's just kind of crazy how these guys with the experience in college don't usually go in the first round, you know? So it's there's usually a reason why you're still a junior or senior in college. And yes,
right,
there are some who come out and, you know, end up being pretty good, but they're usually more of the kind of like scrappy role type guys, not the big superstar, I'm going to take over type of players, you know? You know, it's so that's kind of, it's true. You know, I think Danny tries to get him young. One of the biggest moves he'll always be able to kind of toot his own horn with was Jason Tatum. I mean, that was an
absolute, of course,
76ers, where, you know, Markelle Fultz was this number one pick, and the Celtics found the number one pick, and everyone was like, Markelle Fultz, Markelle Fultz, Markelle Fultz. But he, I mean, Ainge had been on Tatum since he was like six, you know, so like he's Danny is a good talent evaluator a lot of the time. And I do trust, you know, a lot of the guys that he believes in. He does seem to get them young. So, but again, we don't want to get too young. And I just don't know, particularly this year with Smart, with Hayward, with Brown, with Tatum, how Langford's going to get any time unless they're thinking about maybe running him at the point a little bit. Apparently, you know, I was reading some things that said he can kind of handle the ball. So maybe they try him there because I just don't see how he fits in at the two or the three, how he gets any minutes this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do because if they do sign Kemba, they're kind of strapped for cash. So they might have to just have these guys as like the role players to fill out the bench because they, you know, they'll have a mid-level exception and stuff like that, but they don't really have a lot of cash to go out there and sign, you know, nice role players. So that is good and bad. I mean, good, they'll be, you know, on the Celtics, you'll see what they're made of. But if, you know, you're on the end of the bench as a rookie playing 5 minutes a night, like, that's not a great way to develop. I mean, like we saw with Time Lord, the guy would sit there and it's like, if he's not going to play, send him up to Maine, let him play 30 minutes a night and, you know, get the experience.
You just, yeah, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but you hopped right into the Red Claws. As my brother said on draft night, he goes, man, I'll tell you what, though, he's like, Maine Red Claws are going to take home the title this year. So there's still a lot of young talent. You know, and there's definitely room for them to develop kind of up there, but there's not a lot of spots in this team. So, you know, there's a good mix of youth. And I think if you bring in just a couple more vets, you know, I think maybe, again, the next thing, you got to bring in some bigs. And even if you sign Kemba, you'll still likely have the mid-level exception, you know. So maybe there's a couple of free agents out there you can go after. And one thing I wanted to get to, you bring up a good point, is, you know, a lot of people focused on, well, you need a stretch four. You need someone that can pop out and shoot the three or, you know, and yes, it can be overrated. But at the same time, you know, in today's NBA, you have to shoot to win. And I think that with Al kind of getting back to him being the keystone, you know, he kept defenses honest because he could go down low, but you could always get scared of him popping out for a three. And if you bring in a guy like a Capella or something, I don't need to keep harping on him, or like a, you know, maybe trying to go get a Willie Cauley-Stein, Sacramento, or, you know, Robin Lopez, they're very one-dimensional offensively. So that could kind of slow it down a bit. So I'd like them to see them go out, maybe get someone like a Mirotić or Brook Lopez, you know, at least Brook Lopez, he doesn't go back to Milwaukee. He shoots like, you know, in the 30s as opposed to like the 20% Robin shoots. But I don't want to completely ignore the fact that having a shooting big like Al last year was pretty important. And I think that's something that's being overlooked. We don't have a stretch four or anything even close to it right now.
How the hell do Brook Lopez and Robin Lopez, identical twins, have a nearly 10% difference in a 3-point shooting percentage? That you guys are literally genetically exactly the same. How the fuck are you that far apart in your shooting?
It might be a little more. I think when I looked it up earlier, Brook Lopez shot like 34% from deep last year, and Robin shot 21. So,
Jesus.
That's
not good. That's worse than Marcus Smart. But
a little earlier and puts up a few more shots every day. I don't know, man. It's gonna be a
One other thing I want to touch on in the draft, because you reminded me about it, because you mentioned his name. I totally forgot about it a couple of years ago. Markelle Fultz, friend of the podcast. Markelle Fultz, I remember there was all kinds of hype around him as the number one pick. And, you know, this is before all his issues were now. Everyone's calling him a bust. It's like, you know, we'll see. Maybe he just needs to go down to Orlando and just kind of be anonymous before he can rise like a phoenix. But he was supposed to be the number one overall pick. Hands down, Celtics were going to get him, pair him with Isaiah Thomas, and you have that running gun, kind of like two-headed monster at point guard, whatever you want to do, the one and the two. And I was all for it. I mean, this is before Kyrie and Horford and all that, so I was like, all right, cool, let's do it. So we tweeted about it. We retweeted something. It was like just an analysis, a draft analysis video talking about the style of offense that Markelle Fultz fits the best in. And it's a lot of pick and rolls, a lot of, you know, hands off the ball, things like that, shoot first point guards, things like that. But whatever it was, we mentioned it. We tagged Markelle Fultz in it, and he liked it immediately. And my Twitter exploded because people were freaking out. Like, oh, this is bullshit. The draft's rigged. The Celtics are going to get Markelle Fultz. Like, You know, the commissioner is just like handing Markelle Fultz him on a platter, and it was just a thing after a thing after a thing. And then luckily I screenshot it because he quickly unliked it and then, you know, unfollowed us. So Markelle Fultz was front of the podcast for a short period of time. So maybe we'll rekindle that love at some point.
That was about to drop her own little Woj bomb that day.
Yeah. Yeah. We thought we had something, and then we, you know, fucking caused a shitstorm for the guy before he even was in the NBA.
Yeah. That, I mean, and that's why, again, you know, Danny, it always seems like every year, you know, there's always big moves to be made, and it's because Danny's done a good job of building up assets and doing things. So, you know, one thing I just kind of, another approach I thought of was, you know, clearing out more cap space, seeing if you could, I know I was just talking about Hayward, but seeing if you could potentially move Hayward and his contract or anything this year. One guy I really want to talk about, though, is Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins. And he is out there, man. And yes, he may take a little more than the middle of exception, but he did sign with Golden State last year to chase a ring. Only ended up playing 30 regular season games, but he came on and was a pretty good piece of him in the playoffs. Minus the two goaltends he had in like a minute, I think in game like 4 or 5. But it showed his effort. And I just want to, again, I'm the stat guy. I got to lay some numbers down here so people really understand how freaking good this guy really is. He's an absolute freak of nature. So, yes, he only put up 16 points a game last year in 30 games. But, again, only 16 points. It's still 16 points. It's also on a team that had Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin,
right,
Draymond Green. Okay? But the 2 years before that, he averaged 26.9 and 27 points a game, respectively, okay? Along with over 11 rebounds per game in each of those years, 1.5 blocks. Oh, and just for good measure, in 2017, 2018, his last 4 year with New Orleans, he hit 35% of his threes on over 6 3-point attempts a game. So, again, I know I threw a lot of numbers at you there, but DeMarcus Cousins is really good. And if there's any way we can clear even more space and somehow get someone like him in there, he is a guy who could be a presence and could also kind of pop out for a shot and keep the, you know, the defenses guessing. I don't know if this is just wishful thinking. I don't want to get too greedy. We just start off with Kemba. But, my God, if we can make DeMarcus Cousins happen, get him in here.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I love Boogie Cousins. Before he blew his Achilles, before he blew his Achilles, then he hurt his hamstring when he came back from that. He's one of the few guys, maybe three guys in the league that could put up a 40-20 game. Maybe it's him, Anthony Davis, and like LeBron. I mean, there's really not a lot of guys that can get that many boards and that many points and can shoot that well and just be a physical presence. I love him. I think he's a great player. I don't know if you have seen any reports on what he's asking for, because I know he took like a peanuts deal. He's making like $4 or $5 million last year to play with Golden State. So, you know, that's a whole different thing. Like, people take less money to go play with Golden State, chase a ring, and, you know, your stats going to go down. I literally put no stock in that because, like you said, you're playing with all kinds of Hall of Famers all around you. I don't know what he's asking for, because if it's another $4 or $5 million deal, if the Celtics can squeeze something like that out, 100%. But I think he would want more than that. I think he'd be looking for, you know, somewhat of a long-term deal. Maybe you can get him with a long, the exception.
Yeah, the exception, yeah.
Maybe get him with the exception. But I would think he's looking for a little bit of a bigger deal, especially after, I guess, kind of proving he was healthy last year. I can't imagine him taking another one-year deal. But maybe you could do something with Golden State where you do a sign and trade so you can get a little bit of money. You can kind of get under, you can get out from under the cap restrictions, because I don't think the Celtics could fit him. I mean, if you sign Kemba, you're kind of strapped for cash. That's why we're saying you'll have four rookies on the bench, because you don't have enough money. So I think if he takes a mid-level exception, maybe, or a sign and trade would be excellent. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he's been asking for. I don't know if there's been any reports on it.
Well, there would certainly have to be a little finagling. And yeah, who knows if he's going to take that again, but if you look at it, you know, again, he only played in 30 games last year. The year before that with New Orleans, it was like 40-something. So, you know, some teams may still be scared, you know, with his overall health. So he may not have as big of a market as he's hoping. On the flip side, he also might have a big market, because a lot of teams are gearing up to go after these free agents. Not everyone's going to get them. So maybe someone does overspend on him, like a team like the Knicks or something like that. I could totally see that happening. But you bring up an interesting point, the sign and trade. And again, a big guy that would have to be a part of that is potentially a guy like Gordon Hayward. You know, could you see a move like I think it was the Rockets pulled or New Orleans when they had him? You know, they traded Ryan Anderson and also traded a draft pick just to get the salary off the books. And if
right.
they missed out on everybody, just think about this. Think about the Knicks in the position that they're in and what it must be like to be a Knicks fan. And, you know, we have some dear, dear friends who are Knicks fans ourselves. But here's a team that, I don't mean to laugh, but it's kind of funny. Who was like, this is it, guys. This is our year. Durant's going to come here and Kyrie's going to come here. And my God, that's just not going to happen at this point. But
they're fucking morons. It's like sorry not to interrupt you, but it's yeah. not even like the because the Knicks do this every year. Guys, we're getting LeBron. Guys, we're getting Durant. Guys, we're getting Kyrie. It's like every year, like they're getting the biggest free agent. And it's like at some point you have to smarten up and realize they're not coming here until the team's even halfway decent. But to make it even fucking worse, they traded Porzingis away to clear up cap space to go chase these guys, which they had no guarantee of getting. So they traded away the best player they've had since Amari Stoudemire before he got hurt, since like young Carmelo. They trade away the best player they had for nothing, just to have cap space so they can sign a bunch of assholes. Exactly. They're morons. The worst franchise.
That's the textbook definition of a gambit right there. I don't blame at this point. I think, call me crazy, but seeing if you think you realistically have a shot at a guy like DeMarcus Cousins in a 1 or 2 year deal, do you maybe go to the Knicks and say, listen, you need something, you got cap space, do you try to trade them Gordon Hayward or something maybe? Am I getting a little crazy there? Give them a little something. Or you want to talk about that sign and trade, what about with Golden State? Because here's the thing, they're probably going to re-sign Clay, but Durant's probably gone. You know, did they think, well, listen, we still have Draymond and Steph, Clay's not going to play next year, maybe we involved, do something, bring Gordon Hayward there, who I think only has like 2 years left of this deal anyway, so they could get out of it if it didn't work out. So there's possibilities. There would be some finagling, but you could potentially bring a guy like Cousins or another big piece in too if you did it right.
So I like a sign and trade, and we're talking a lot about it. I don't think they'll ever trade Hayward. I think the perception out there now, right or wrong, is that they don't treat the players well because, you know, they traded Isaiah after his sister died.
Yeah.
Jay Crowder made a big fucking stink about everything. Kyrie's bitching to everyone who will listen. So I just don't see them trading Hayward. I think even if he sucks, I think they'll just swallow it because they don't want the perception like, oh, we dumped another guy when he was down on his luck. Mm-hmm. But getting back to sign and trade, so you have to make salaries work in some capacity. And I know that the sign and trades allow you to kind of, finagle a little bit. But I don't know the numbers exactly. You'd have to figure out what the Celtics could absorb. Golden State, I don't know what they could absorb. Like, I don't know if they would want a Hayward back who makes $30 million. I think with, Steph Curry, they got to pay Clay. They got to pay, Draymond. They want to try and sign Durant to a max, even though he's going to miss next year. So it's like, they don't really have any money. Like, this is something we've been, expecting for years. It's like Golden State has to win four titles now because in 5 years, they're completely fucking sunk under money. So it's like, now that, Clay's hurt, Durant's hurt, they're going to be a very different team, but still going to be really strapped with the luxury tax. So maybe you can offer them some type of relief on salaries, or I don't know.
Well, here's a nut job scenario too. And you're right. I mean, Golden State, I was just thinking, because I don't think Durant is going to re-sign there. I think he ends up going to the Nets or the Knicks or something. Who knows? The Knicks could still get Durant. If they're like, fine, I don't care if you're hurt. Just take my money, please.
That's crazy. Imagine that. Like, I can't work for the next year, but if you want, I will take the money and then I promise to come back in 12 months and still be good. Like, I mean, I guess I do. He's so good. He's not really a big heavy guy that you'd worry about his foot. He's not necessarily a player that, like, he's a guy that can post up and shoot. He's so long. If he like faded to a, mid-range 3-point guy, like, you'd be okay with that. So I guess it's not as big of a risk for someone like DeMarcus Cousins with a bum Achilles.
He could be 80% of himself and he's still a top 5 player in the league. I mean, so it's worth it. But no, think about this crazy scenario. There was another story that was out there today, again, going back to Capella, and, that potentially there could be a 3-team trade because the Rockets really want to shed some salary. And for some reason, So it's my favorite that they have Harden and Chris Paul, and they still want to go after Jimmy Butler, which I find hysterical. But anyway, that's a horse of a different color. So the trait, though, that I could see potentially happening is, what if this happens? What if Philly loses Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, okay, who's also a free agent, and you somehow get involved in that trade, bring Capella here, and somehow move Hayward's salary at the same time? I know it seems like for the past like 20 minutes, I'm trying to desperately get rid of Gordon Hayward, which
fucking
is the
Hayward.
Opposite of, like I said, I want to see how he does. But like I said, I'm really scared about the fit. I just don't understand, especially after drafting Romeo Langford too, who, if you draft a kid in the lottery, you have to give him minutes. You can't just let a lottery pick sit there. So you, again, Smart, Hayward, Brown, Tatum, Langford. That's five people right there. You know, and how do you fit them in? So I don't think it's that crazy to think about moving Hayward right now, only if you bring in Kemba. But there are possibilities. So I don't think, even if we bring in Kemba, I could still see some crazy, wacky trade with Trader Danny coming out. It may not be over with just Kemba. Like, this could honestly be one of the biggest, most active Celtics off seasons. We've been promised this for the past 3-4 years. This could be the year that we see all the crazy moves and all the assets move and something finally happening. We still get that Memphis pick, you know, next year or the year after, depending on when it conveys. There's still some assets. We could still see a crazy trade, even if Kemba comes here. So Danny could have something really up his sleeve. I think he's really, really got the gears moving behind the scenes this summer.
Hashtag Wick fireworks.
Ooh.
So I honestly don't think they'll ever move Hayward. I think they just, they're like, we can't deal with that perception. And then plus Brad's boys with them. So I don't know if it'll ever happen. But I definitely think Danny's never resting. He loves wheeling and dealing. And it's funny because we always talk about, you know, like, call him Trader Danny, Dealer Dan, whatever you want to call him. Back in the dark days when we had like, what the hell was Rob, Kim Kardashian's husband for a month? What was his name?
Chris Humphries.
Chris Humphries, yeah. So... Yeah, we had Chris Humphries during that excellent era. He made like 50 trades in like 30 days or something fucking crazy. So, you know, Danny gets off on it. So I would not be shocked to see him completely turn the roster upside down. But I think he's at least, you know, smart enough to show restraint, not just submarine the franchise just to get one guy for a year. But it's funny. I mean, like, it's something I've been saying for years. The NBA offseason is the best show on TV. I mean, we've been talking for the past hour about free agents and the draft picks and who's going where and signing trades and mid-level exceptions and what free agents going where and how the Knicks are preparing for it months in advance and how Kyrie might be bailing on his team to go to the Nets. So it literally never lacks for drama, and I love it. It's my favorite show.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's... Someone was just saying the other day that, like, it's more entertaining to watch the NBA in the summer when it's actually not on TV, you know? it's
incredible. Yeah. It's incredible. You have Kyrie talking about movies he's filming, jumping teams. You have Horford bouncing around. Who's going to sign him? And it's funny. Free agency doesn't even start for another fucking week. I mean, if we're being honest, Woj and Shams kind of ruined the fun of July 1. I mean, assuming what they're reporting is correct, we already know where Kyrie's going, Kemba's going, Durant's going. We already know where AD is. So it's like all the big guys are off the market. So thanks, well, guys.
We do and we don't, though, because I think, you know, the one thing is, even with Woj, I mean, he was pretty clear cut today. For those that didn't see it, you know, the story broke the other day, and I actually wrote a piece on this where Mark Stein, who, I mean, he's someone I've been watching since I was a kid, you know, I mean, he is in the know. He was the first one that said the Celtics were a stealth suitor, which means shit. It doesn't mean anything.
yeah. I mean, they might.
Something. But, you know, then it escalated to Woj coming out and going, yeah, that's kind of true. And then Woj said today, barring any unforeseen or, you know, circumstances, that he will be a Celtic. I mean, that's a pretty bold claim if it's not true. But besides that, we don't know where Kyrie's going. We don't know where Durant's going. Kawhi is meeting. He already said he's going to meet with the Clippers and the Lakers now, which surprised me because I just could never see Kawhi going to be a third wheel after what he just did. And even back when he won a championship with the Spurs, he was the one, maybe the two, you know. So I just can't see him sitting behind LeBron and AD. But, you know, he also could go back to Toronto. So there is still a lot of intrigue and a lot that we don't know. And like I said, there could be some crazy trades. There are a lot of low-level free agents this year on the market, too. A lot of guys that are getting overlooked. I already mentioned some of them. You know, the Lopez's are out there. DeMarcus Cousins. You've also got even guys like Nikola Mirotic, who I've mentioned too, you know, kind of a stretch for. Bogdanovic, the kid from Indiana, is out there. Another one that I was interested because he just shoots the lights out. So, like, it's just crazy because even after the top guys, it's still a deep, awesome market, and it's just going to be a whirlwind this summer. I'm so excited. I really am.
And this is why the NBA is the most popular sport in America right now, because as hard as the NFL tries to extend the season where they're pretty much on TV all year long, they move the draft, they have coverage going on, there's always something to talk about in the NFL, but nothing beats the drama of the NBA. These guys, there's always something going on. There's all the big egos, and it's such a smaller situation where it's like, you know, you have five players. I mean, I know you get 12-man roster, whatever, but five players – really, you have three good players and then you're set. Whereas NFL, you know, 50-man rosters, if someone's being a dickhead like Adelius Thomas, you can go fucking kick rocks. So it's like you really like are harping on every single thing every single top player does. So it's a reality show and it's my favorite show. And I cannot wait to see the next episode July 1st.
Gonna be a lot of fireworks next week, man. Whole lot. Including this guy's wedding over here in a week.
Yep. Yeah. Right. Mr. and Mrs. 300s.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. 300s as of next Saturday. So don't you worry, folks. We'll keep you up to date on the ongoings there as well.
I'm sure there will be a blackout drunk 300s report live from Charles River at some point.
From the red wedding of the Charles River.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
Just like I said, man, I'm just super excited for everything next week, including what we just talked about. So we're in for a hell of a week next week, for sure, in the summer.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on the 300s podcast. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes or Google Play or Spotify. Leave a review, too. So, all right, guys, we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, Doc.